And now, Robert Trout in the news, direct from the NBC newsroom in New York, presented by Pillsbury. Whether he's 6 or 60, if you want to put a twinkle in a man's eyes, serve him some homemade pie or pie a la mode. Tender, crusted pie with light, rich, flaky crust made with the new Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix. If you haven't tried Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix, you just can't know how wonderfully quick and easy it is to make perfect pie crust. You can fix it while the oven heats. All you do is add water to the mix, and there's 9 full ounces in every package, plenty to make a big two-crust pie. Berries are in season now, and so are fresh peaches. It's time for homemade pie at your house. Get a package of Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix soon. Now, Bob Trout with the latest news.
President Truman returned to the White House 5 minutes ago, tanned and rested after his cruise aboard the Williamsburg, ready for the campaign that may carry him into more states than any other campaigning president has ever visited. He opens his campaign on Labor Day with 5 speeches in Michigan. Governor Dewey's friends say some of his campaign speeches on foreign policy may be based on the idea of a United States of Europe. Governor Dewey's in favor of it, and France has now taken the lead in working for it. Henry Wallace is already campaigning. Today he began his invasion of the South in Norfolk, Virginia. In Texas, most of the votes have been counted in the Democratic primary runoff for the seat in the Senate, now held by Pappy O'Daniel. And the latest report shows that former Texas Governor Coke Stevenson has a hairbreadth lead over Representative Lyndon Johnson. It's hot here in New York today, in the 90s again. The Federal Weather Bureau expects some relief from the heat for limited areas of the nation, but it will be only temporary relief. Nearly 150 reported dead so far in 16 states. That Atlantic hurricane is now 500 miles east of Daytona Beach, Florida. It stopped moving forward, but it's growing more violent. There's a typhoon whipping up the Pacific between the Philippines and Okinawa, and the California Institute of Technology reports a fairly severe earthquake 5,500 miles from California in an undetermined direction. The word from Moscow is that a four-power agreement is almost finished, and the announcement should be out this coming week, but the agreement won't cover much ground. The Cold War is as hot as ever in Berlin, where the communists say they're going to increase their efforts to overthrow the elected city government. 29 Australian aviators arrived in London today on their way to join the Berlin airlift. Another arrival in London was Peter Zenkel, the former deputy premier of Czechoslovakia, who said the last 6 weeks he spent in Czechoslovakia under the communists were worse than the 6 years he spent in the terrible German concentration camp in Buchenwald. In Czechoslovakia today, a letter was read from the pulpit in all the Catholic churches accusing the present Czech government of carrying on a secret campaign against religion. Former French Premier Ramadier has spent the day in a series of conferences in Paris trying to form another French government of the middle without communists or de Gaullists. The Dutch are getting ready to welcome Queen Wilhelmina, who tomorrow comes out of semi-retirement in the country for a week-long birthday celebration in Amsterdam, and at the end of the week she ends her 50-year reign by abdicating. In Palestine, the United Nations are still hoping that both sides will comply with the UN proposals to pacify Jerusalem. Here at home, all through the nation, the draft boards are ready to begin America's peacetime draft that starts tomorrow with the registration of all 25-year-old men born after August 30th in 1922. And now for Pillsbury, here's Arthur Gary.
Thank you, Bob Trout. All over America, women are praising Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix. It's the largest-selling pie crust mix in the country, and the reason why is in the pie. Yes, the pie you bake with Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix will be perfect. The crust will have a tempting golden brown color. It'll be rich with the flavor of fine shortening. It'll be light, tender, and flaky. Why not always use America's first choice, America's largest-selling pie crust mix? Get a package of Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix tomorrow. Listen again next Sunday at this time for Bob Trout in the News, brought to you by Pillsbury, greatest name in flour. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
All right, soldier, raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Charles A. Forbes, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the United States of America.
I, Charles A. Forbes, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the United States of America.
That I will serve them honestly and faithfully against all their enemies whomsoever.
That I will serve them honestly and faithfully against all their enemies whomsoever.
That I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me according to the rules and articles of war.
That I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me according to the rules and articles of war.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Living 1948, brought to you by NBC and its affiliated stations, holds up its radio mirror this historic week that marks the swearing in of a new draft army to reflect the changes that have taken place since the pre-war draft and detail what lies ahead for those who will soon be looking at the world through khaki-colored glasses. In a drama document entitled
New Draft, New Army.
And here is your narrator, Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. In the midst of an uneasy present punctuated with international question marks, this nation, determined to be master of its fate, once again calls from the homes of the land its young men. The purpose is the same as last time.
Peace and security.
The notice that reaches them in the mail is the same.
Greetings from the President of the United States.
But the question on everybody's mind is,
will the Army be any different?
That is a good question. For since our V-Days, America, few of us have missed hearing some of the verbal mud slung in the direction of the Army by its erstwhile members. Writing in the August issue of Harper's Magazine, former Brigadier General Robert Wood Johnson described what he called a horde of eastbound refugees overflowing our Pacific bases after victory. Said he,
"This crowd packed all the planes and stood in line for hours waiting for even a little deck space on any homebound ship. These were refugees from no enemy invader, but from their own military forces."
Aside from the natural eagerness to return to the joys of civilian life, many, he writes, were stung to haste by,
"I'm sick and tired of saying yes, sir, to officers who tell us we're wrong when we're right."
And others,
"I can't get away fast enough from that old army game.
Put a square peg in a round hole."
But the past is past. We face now, America, the future, with a whole new set of 18 to 25-year-olds ready to follow in the footsteps of their older brothers. It is these with whom we concern ourselves today and propose to hold up our radio mirror to reflect the answers to such questions as,
what are my chances of being drafted?
What kind of training will I get?
But especially,
will it be the same old army of treat 'em rough and tell 'em nothing, or
have lessons been learned from the past? Will it really be a brand new army?
My name is Charles A. Forbes, Private AUS, as of 3 weeks ago.
You're listening to a young man who entered the Army just ahead of the draft. Because his experience is typical of what lies ahead for the prospective draftee, we invite you to hear his story.
It all began back in June in Detroit. That's my home. When I was sitting in the living room with my father, listening in to the news on the radio.
From the nation's capital, President Truman today signed the peacetime draft bill and two appropriation measures that give over $10 billion to the Army, Navy, and Air Forces. The president's action on the conscription measure makes it law.
Yeah, that's enough news for tonight, son.
I don't know what to do, Dad. I've got a good job. I won't be 19 till November. Yeah, but that's not very long off.
You got your mind made up, though, haven't you, Chuck?
Yeah, I guess I have, Dad.
Well, your job will still be waiting for you next summer.
And so will Jenny, I hope.
She will, boy. Janet will still be here. And so will your future.
Well, there's nothing like finding out. The next afternoon, me and a couple of friends took off from work and went down to the Army recruiting station at Woodward, Michigan, across from the city hall. There was the usual sergeant in charge, but wait a minute. Maybe he wasn't the usual sergeant at all.
Gentlemen, I've got a hunch once you're in the Army, you're gonna like it.
That ain't the way we heard it.
That's a different Army, Forbes. I know that sounds like a recruiting poster, but we've learned a lot in the last 8 years. There's a real future in the Army. Opportunity for the best training in the world.
Well, how soon could we join up?
Gee, I don't know. About 3 weeks, we'll have another quota.
3 weeks?
Of course, if you're really interested. Tell you what, be here at 7:45 tomorrow morning. It's just possible I can squeeze you in.
We were there in the dot at 7:45 next morning. And the first thing that happened after we enlisted was...
Something pleasant, gentlemen. A 3-day pass.
Which was a break, all right. But 3 days wasn't near long enough to say goodbye to my friends and kiss Janny goodbye. Gosh, that took a whole day in itself. Say, has anybody seen my tennis racket?
Oh, son, I don't think you'll need your tennis racket. The Army may have changed, but I don't think it's changed that much.
Next stop, Lanya Station, to get our physical.
All right, soldier. Leave your clothes in there and report back to me.
Physical okay for 4 out of 5 of us. Next thing that happened was we waited, Army style. After 2 hours, the captain told us to raise our right hands.
I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me.
I was in. I was really in. But no more 3-day passes just yet.
The following details will sweep the barracks, make the bunks, clean up the yard, and generally police the barracks. All right, Eddie. Ebeling, Zagorski, Forbes.
Next evening at 11 p.m., a bus took me to the railroad station, and we got on a train bound for Louisville, Kentucky. The next morning, just before noon...
All right, men. We'll go in an orderly formation to the dining room in the station, and after you're fed, you'll board a bus for Fort Knox. You're assigned for processing to the 3rd Armored Division. 5 days will be devoted to testing you, fitting you with clothes, and deciding where you'll be sent for your 8-week basis. Jet!
A week ago last Thursday, I spent my first day at the 3rd Armored Division Receiving Center, Fort Knox, Kentucky. We were given an orientation lecture, and we were given fatigues. Work clothes, that is. Given details, sweeping, fixing up barracks, cleaning up the yard, and then...
Roll up your sleeves, soldier.
Both of them?
Both of them. This side, typhoid.
And this side, tetanus. Easy, soldier. This ain't gonna kill you, you know.
Hey! Come to think of it, that's the first real jolt the Army gave me. I had to admit it was a whole lot different than I thought it was going to be. So far, I hadn't met up with the tough buck sergeants we'd all heard about and seen in the movies shouting...
Hey, you, get a move on. Come on now, get a move on.
As a matter of fact, there just aren't any buck sergeants anymore. Yep, the new Army's done away with that grade. They're corporals now. So far, too, nobody was treating us like dumb animals, but instead taking the trouble to explain things to us.
Now, men, we're going to tell you why we ask you to observe these regulations. In the first place...
Of course, a couple of things I recognize from what the boys told me about the Army before. During a storm, for instance, when you're reading at the barracks...
Hey, there go the lights again.
Might as well turn in, guys. They won't be around to fix them for a week.
But all I can say is, if the rest of the year pans out like the beginning, I, for one soldier, will be perfectly satisfied.
This, then, is a report from Private Charles A. Forbes of Detroit, Michigan. His saga will be the saga of the draftee. About the draft, America, some questions and answers.
Forward! Hutch!
When does the draft actually begin?
This week, beginning Monday, August 30th, some 4,000 draft boards will be set in motion, and some 7.5 million Americans, 18 through 25, will begin registering.
For the right flag! Hutch!
When will I be inducted?
Not before September 22nd, or 90 days after President Truman signed the new peacetime draft bill. Probable induction will begin around October 1st.
The left flag!
Are we 18-year-olds subject to draft?
No. However, you may volunteer for 1 year's training, as did Chuck Forbes.
To the rear!
What are my chances of being drafted?
According to the best available statistics, 1 chance in 9 of being drafted within the next year.
To the rear!
there a chance I'll be drafted into the Navy, Marines, or Air Force?
Practically none. All draftees, at least during the first month, go to the Army to build up authorized strength.
By the black!
Where will the new soldier be sent for training?
In general, draftees will be ordered to training centers nearest their homes. After basic training, they may be sent anywhere within the United States or overseas.
Forward!
What type of training will I get?
8 weeks of basic training, from drilling to map reading and tactical training, for all except those with prior military service.
Left up!
And after basic training?
Many will be given advanced technical training in clerical work, cooking and mess management, mechanical work, operation of radios, and various supply and administrative duties. However, no draftee soldier will be given airborne training unless he volunteers for service in an airborne unit.
Forward!
Will I be given a job similar to the one I held in civilian life?
Insofar as possible. Every effort will be made to utilize skills acquired in civilian life. However, the needs of the service must govern.
How will a new draftee be treated?
Let Army Secretary Kenneth Royal answer that.
A draftee soldier will lead a normal, wholesome, busy, and active life, though more carefully planned than he ever imagined. He will receive ample, well-cooked, nourishing meals of a simple, wholesome character. He will have adequate medical care. He will have reasonably comfortable quarters, but not luxuries.
Promises, you say, America? Check. But if we're to credit the experiences of Private Chuck Forbes and others like him who've entered ahead of the draft and are giving the Army a try, apparently, sincere efforts are being made to fulfill them. But Forbes, after all, is just one person. Let's take the case of another one-year volunteer and see what we get. We give you Private James Cougis of Gary, Indiana.
I was at Third Armored at the same time as Chuck Forbes. But maybe I was a little better prepared. I had a brother, 24, a real veteran. He was a CB at Iwo Jima. Gus said to me...
Get in, kid. You're going to have to sooner or later anyway.
So I got in.
You're young. Just remember, keep your mouth shut and listen. You get along.
That's what Gus told me. But what bothers me is things ain't exactly like he said they were gonna be. Why? That's what I can't understand. Why?
Because Private Cougis, back in 1946, having heard the criticisms leveled at it by its ex-soldiers, the Army decided to make an experiment. Two men, General Jacob L. Devers, now Army Field Forces Commander, and Major General John M. Devine batted a radically new idea back and forth between them, somewhat like this.
What we'll do then, Johnny, is set up a place to test ideas on how the Army should be run. Same way we've set up a place to test weapons.
Well, it's worth a try, General. That's a sound idea. I'd like to introduce some sort of system in which the trainees will supply their own discipline, self-discipline.
Good. We'll get this unit going at Fort Knox.
Hmm.
Try to put in the Army what veterans say were absent. Understanding. Humanity.
Yeah, we'll let anybody who's interested come out, see what we're doing. You know, punch holes in it, make suggestions.
Let's try it in training. Let's see if we can't get away from the tough sergeant, dumb recruit idea.
Thus did UMT get its beginning. And many of the things the U.S. Army learned through this experiment are now, at the discretion of individual commanders, being applied in military training throughout the country. First to try the new methods was Fort Knox's famous 3rd Armored Division. They introduced such new procedures and changes as...
The merit system.
Merits are given for routine tasks outstandingly performed.
The demerit system.
A trainee is evaluated by his own actions, by his own omissions and commissions. Example...
Private Forbes, bedmate improperly, trash around bunks, 2 demerits.
Demerits are charged for minor infractions and may be worked off by voluntary fatigue, such as KP and the trainee's off hours. 15 demerits mean...
No weekend pass for you, Private Forbes.
Another innovation, the trainee courts.
A minor offense, too serious for demerits and not serious enough for court-martial, is tried by a court made up of trainees, with an officer as law member, but without a vote. Example...
This court will now hear the case of Private Cougis, charged with overstaying his weekend leave 5 hours.
The recommendation of the trainee president, the trainee judge advocate, and the trainee defense counsel is usually followed.
The commanding general's enlisted aid system.
To encourage individual competition and training, the outstanding trainee of the day is selected each day to act as a member of the division commander's personal staff. Then the commanding general writes a letter.
I wish to compliment you on the superior soldierly qualities of your son, Private Harry Anderson. Yesterday, your son was selected as the outstanding trainee of the day.
Purpose to give the young soldier an insight to the problems of the division commander, impressions which he invariably passes on to his buddies.
These and other new policies tried out at Fort Knox represent a revised conception in the philosophy behind military training. While UMT has not yet been adopted, this concept lives in many camps, where it is serving to help instill what many feel to be a long-needed vigor in Army life. Major General Ray T. Maddox, former commander of the 3rd Armored, got to the heart of the matter when he said,
"The first problem confronting the personnel of a training division is the adjustment of civilians to military life. If a young soldier fails to make a satisfactory adjustment, this fact is manifested during the early part of his service. The manifestation generally takes the form of going absent without leave. Here are some of the most common reasons for that.
I wanted to get home and see my folks. I guess I was kind of homesick.
Homesickness, over 18%.
Oh, what's the stew about? We didn't lose any war just because I took a day off, did we? Geez, you think...
Irresponsibility, over 17%.
My mother was sick, and I got to worrying, and... Well, I just had to go and see for myself.
Sickness in the family, over 13%.
I needed to have a talk with my wife. I could tell from a letter something was wrong, so I figured...
Social problems in the family, over 12%. So a training division must first endeavor to remove, without adversely affecting military efficiency, those problems which are paramount in the young soldier's mind when he enters the Army. The personal relationship must be established from the very first, based upon four fundamental principles that must be followed by the Army cadreman or leader.
I will keep the young soldier informed. Tell him the reasons why.
I will instill confidence by demonstrating a thorough knowledge of my profession.
I will set an example by my personal conduct.
I will treat all recruits on a plane of decent human relationship.
Again, let's ask, how about those promises, soldier? The rest of you one-year men who are just getting your feet wet in the new Army, what do you say about that? Private Donald A. Kepshire, Gary, Indiana.
It's okay. Good meals, good beds, good treatment.
Private Kenneth Fosman of Holland, Michigan.
This Army's all right. Just don't give me an office job.
Private August N. Rossi of Dearborn, Michigan.
Now, I say we're treated right. Only I wish they'd give a little extra time to a man when he knows what he wants and can make the grade.
Private Lucky Anderson of Pontiac, Michigan.
No complaints.
Private Burton Rhodes of Lewiston, Michigan.
I've met a lot of swell guys. 1 year of this is all right. And when I get out, I want to be...
Be what, Private Rhodes?
A civilian.
To prepare for the influx of thousands of new draftees, the Army Field Force's top-ranking commanders arrived at Fort Knox, Kentucky, at 3rd Armored Division headquarters, to pick up know-how for new training facilities. Fort Knox was chosen because it had developed UMT. For 2 days, these men who'll be in charge of the new Army studied the newly tested techniques. Then at a press conference, questions were fired. First at Major General Roderick R. Allen, commanding general of the 3rd Armored.
But this is an atomic age, General Allen. Haven't military developments since World War II changed the requirements of a soldier's basic training?
Well, basic training is still basic training. We still have to teach a man to take care of himself. Fire a gun, pitch a tent, and even to swim.
Thank you, General.
Then General Devers came under journalistic fire.
How about the caste system, General? Not tossing that into the ash can in this new Army, are you?
We're not tossing the family away, are we? Somebody's got to be boss. In the home, it's the father or the mother. Business is a top-level boss, isn't there? Part of our democratic system. In the Army, everybody's got a chance to work up, same as any place else. Competition makes for keen leadership, as does the chance for advancement.
Chief of Staff General Omar Bradley gave the seminar its keynote spark.
We must teach this new Army the continuing importance of our time-honored Army tradition. The new Army must take from the old honor, integrity, duty. We must tell the truth about our Army, but let us tell its good points as well as its weaknesses, and earnestly strive to overcome what is still faulty about ourselves. We must think of all men as individuals, respect their dignity and integrity. Let us inspire our men by our example, and let us keep our nation informed of their army. It is theirs. When the soldier is discharged, let us honestly say,
we've made soldiers of them.
We've treated them fairly and humanely.
And we have helped them physically, mentally, morally.
If we can accomplish these three objectives in the new army, we will cease to provide the whipping post of public opinion some have desired. In most cases, in my opinion, understandably. And we will have become, in truth, a new army.
But what about you, America? How do you feel about all this? Well, here with us today is a man who makes a business out of keeping his 10 fingers constantly on your pulse. George Gallup, whom you all know for his Gallup poll. Come in, Dr. Gallup.
I'm already in, Ben.
Fine, then let's step right into the draft.
Well, Ben, the Gallup poll has conducted some 15 separate surveys on compulsory military training since 1942.
And discovered?
Every single poll found that a majority of the voters felt this way.
Who, me? Oh, I'm in favor of the draft. But maybe those who favored it had no children to be touched by it.
Wrong, Ben. We found that parents with sons of draft age voted no differently from the rest of the country.
What reasons, Dr. Gallup, did Americans give for favoring the draft?
Listen.
We don't want another Pearl Harbor, do we?
I feel that 1 year's training in the Army and Navy would make them more responsible citizens.
How about those that were opposed?
Their opinions went something like this.
The draft will interfere too much with a guy's education or his career just when he's getting started.
And how about building up too much military mindedness, brother? Had you thought of that?
Of course, you realize public opinion is a very vital factor in military draft, Ben. If the people aren't for it, it can't possibly succeed. But if they think it falls equitably on all, that's a big help, too.
Well, do they?
Well, we asked them during the last war.
Do you believe the draft has been handled fairly in your community?
7 out of 10 said,
absolutely.
And that, incidentally, has a bearing on the present willingness of the people to accept this draft. To me, the most startling fact of all is that peacetime military training is today accepted by a substantial majority of us.
Nearly 2 out of every 3.
That huge majority means that the traditional American way has been broken again for the second time in 150 years. And yet the breaking is widely accepted by the people. Historically, this seems to me to have great significance. For it shows, in the midst of living, 1948, the American people are firmly committed to a policy of preparedness.
Thank you, Dr. George Gallup. This, then, America, is how you feel about the new draft, concerning which we brought you our report today. As for the new army, we'll know more about that when more of our own sons start reporting. Suffice to say, the Army has given positive evidence of its desire to repair many of the mistakes of the past. And for those parents who are worried, we close with this reminder from veteran and news columnist of Scripps Howard, Robert C. Ruach.
A trick in the Army is not exactly indispensable to the rich fool life. But it may be of some comfort to the parents to reflect that Junior will probably be better off with his uncle than if he stayed home with the folks. It can't hurt a good kid, may help a bad one. The chances are you will be proud of him when you get him back.
Living 1948 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC public affairs staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold, with scripts written by Lou Hazen. Today's script was written by William Hodaff. Technical advice by Jane Tiffany Wagner. Music conducted by Milton Catons. Your narrator was Ben Grauer, with an assist from Dr. George Gallup of the American Institute of Public Opinion. The program was directed by Jack Cuney. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1948 by joining us again next week when we'll present another of our drama documents entitled
Plight of Our Hospitals.
To
Robert Warren speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.